welcome. I'd like to acknowledge the continuing sovereignty of all First Nations peoples right across the country. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you. And welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. Well, good morning, Amy. How are you?
I'm good. How are you this morning?
Yes, yes, very good. Father's Day yesterday.
Oh, yeah, it would have been lovely.
Yeah, it was a deadly day. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nine daughters you got, don't you?
Yeah, nine daughters and 23 grandchildren and a couple of great-grandchildren in there with the 23 as well. So, yeah, yeah, we had a nice little family barbecue on the deck and stuff.
I hope all our listeners had a good Father's Day as well yesterday.
Let's hope so. Yes, let's hope so. It should be Father's Day every day and Mother's Day.
And single Mother's Day as well.
I think everyone. Yes.
I was thinking of all the single mums out there yesterday.
Should celebrate, celebrate all parents and people struggling and being challenged with bringing up their young ones. Today, we are talking about the issue of ice, the ice epidemic. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. So we're talking to Sandy Gillies. Sandy Gillies is the General Manager of the Policy and Innovation and Service Development at QAIC, Queensland Aboriginal Islander Health Council. Sandy, welcome to the program. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you. I'm well.
Very good. Tell us your mob, your country.
Yes, yeah, so I'm a Goongari woman from southwest Queensland, and My family are the Kearnses and the Jacksons and the Swans.
All right.
The big mob.
Big mob, yes, big mob. Mm. And we've got Ailsa Lively from Gindaja Residential Rehabilitation in Yarrabah. Ailsa, welcome to the program. How are you?
Good. And
good.
It's a wonderful morning this morning. Yes. Glad to be on the show this morning.
Yeah, thank you for giving us your time. It's really we really appreciate hearing from people like yourself and Sandy that are prepared to give us some time to discuss some of the issues and challenges that confront our mob. Now, I also tell us your mob, your country.
Yeah, I'm a Kungandji woman from Yarrabah. It's my grandfather's country.
Yeah.
And my mother. So, a Yarrabah girl.
You're on home country, eh?
Yeah.
Good one. And what a beautiful home country it is too.
Yeah.
It's hard to beat Yarrabah country. It's beautiful. Tell me, Gindaja, how long has it been established and what's the purpose? What's its role?
Gindaja's been around for over 30 years now, probably closer to 40, I'd say. We're a residential alcohol and drug rehabilitation centre, and it started many years ago from a group of people in the community that were concerned with now more with alcohol issues. They started from a house in the community, and eventually they were given some land out in the bush a bit, and they operated out of a tin shack for many, many years. About 10 years ago, the government gave some funding to build the residential centre, and we've been here since then.
Wow. Only 40 years. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And a residential centre means that you cater for people staying in, living in there.
Yeah.
How many people can you cater to? Can you accommodate?
We can accommodate up to 21 people
at
a time.
Like a small hotel, 21 people. Well, pardon the pun there, a hotel, as if you want to bloody be compared to a hotel, for God's sake. Sorry about that.
Everyone will want to go there then.
I'm sorry about that.
Well, it's for me.
But that's big, 21 people you can accommodate there.
Yeah.
Men and women?
Men and women.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Like, we take people from all over. You know, we've had people even coming from Melbourne to our
really?
Centre.
Really? Okay.
So, yeah, and we get people from all over Queensland.
Okay.
So, main areas are, Cape, Gulf, Cairns, and Yarrabah, of course. But, we have people coming from all over. And not only Indigenous, we have non-Indigenous coming as well.
Okay.
So, we're open. If anyone wants assistance and want to make a change in their life, they're welcome.
Elsa, you mentioned before that it began as a way to sort of deal with the alcohol problems in Yarrabah, but today we're facing a completely different crisis. I mean, when you talk about ICE, just looking at your home community, would you call it an epidemic just yet, or is it just growing and we still have time to change it?
Yeah, it's not an epidemic just yet. Well, I think it's time now for us to, you know, start action, get out there and, you know, promote the effects, and that's so, you know, we can stop it. But it is growing, you know, and the concern is a lot of younger people are involved in it. And there are some people from the community that have been long-time users of this drug. And, you know, just connections with Cairns, they move into Cairns and they get into, you know, other groups. So, you know, they're introduced to that drug and then, you know, families visit, they get mixed up in it, they bring it back home. But we know there is, you know, a group of young people that are experimenting with the drug and some that have actually been affected, you know, with mental health issues and that kind of stuff.
Is this relatively recently? You said there were a few people who were long-time users. Yeah. Why now are we seeing a lot of young people taking it up?
I don't know. Like, for Yarrabah itself, my only explanation is that the younger ones are, you know, going into Cairns for other reasons, you know, because we do have an alcohol management plan here, so they do go into Cairns, you know, to the nightlife and that kind of stuff. So they're being introduced to these other drugs, you know, and becoming addicted. You know, a lot of our mob also just for accommodation issues because, you know, we do have a lot of social housing issues in the community. There's not enough houses to house the families. You know, our mob are taking a step up and going out and looking for accommodation outside the community, but, you know, that becomes a risk then too because they become mixed up in, you know, the social issues that are happening in the Cairns communities with the introduction of these new drugs and that kind of stuff.
Sandy, would you say that it started in sort of urban and regional areas and is starting to filter out to more remote areas like Yarrabah?
Look, I think, Amy, the issue is we don't have the data or we don't have the evidence to suggest sort of where, but you know, like I obviously through this process we've done a fair bit of research and you know, obviously the city centres have means, they have ways, and you know they're the bigger sort of supply centre, I suppose. And I suppose the way that this stuff started with Quake and Quismic, so Quismic is the Queensland Indigenous Substance Misuse Council, which is a network of the residential rehab, so ALSA, Gindaja, and there's another four, Rockhampton, so Gumby, and you know, spread out across the state. We've also got the Normanton Recovering Community Wellbeing Service, the Queensland Aboriginal and Alcohol Services in New Farm and Ferdies on Palm. Is that we were getting anecdotal evidence from our communities that that families were experiencing increased violence from family members who are using the ICE. In some places, child protection orders had risen as a result of a parent or a caregiver using ICE. And what Else was just talking about, that there is a lack of specialised and specific rehabilitation counselling and support services. So, for example, you know, Gindaja's got 21 beds, and then we have an influx of ICE, then, you know, yes, we obviously are going to need increased capacity for our residential rehab services to actually take additional people on, but also detoxification. And the other concern, as Elsa just raised, was young people using ICE in the communities is increasing. And not in all communities, but there has been some anecdotal evidence that ICE has been manufactured in some communities and sold to community members. Whilst it's not an epidemic, it has definitely got the ability to go throughout communities like wildfire.
And, Sandra, I know a lot of our listeners probably, I mean, I think even just at the radio station, we know of someone or there's a family member who've become addicted to ICE. So I think a lot of people are talking about it being a problem. Why is it such a destructive drug?
Look, as I said, I didn't know much about it until I started doing the research and you know, just talking to people. And look, people are fairly open about using ice. And I was on a radio interview a couple of weeks ago and talked about it. I was on a plane and this guy just very openly said to me, you know, he's an ice user. He said, and I use ice, he said, because it's cheaper. It's cheaper than going out in the valley and getting on, you know, having a night on the grog. But also, I'm able to keep control, and I don't have, you know, I don't lose my ability to be in control of my environment. I don't have the hangover. I don't, and I'm sitting here going, you've actually convinced yourself, even though the damage, as we know, you know, I'm not saying alcohol doesn't damage you as well. It does, but when we normalise and create, you know, create society that says, well, drink until a point where, you know, you're fighting and then that's not okay, but it's okay to have a couple of beers and, you know, with your meal and stuff like that. But to listen to someone who was using, and I was just sitting there going, I can't believe it. He in his head, he's definitely telling me there's no way in the world he's going to get off it because it gives him all these benefits and it's cheaper. I think that's the issue, is it is actually cheaper. You know, $50 for a bag, or he was saying $50 for a bag, versus...
And it's,
you know,
a lot purer nowadays, isn't it? You get actually, for a cheaper amount, a purer quantity.
Yes, well, I was also listening to a radio interview, this morning with somebody, and they were saying that the concern is that it's actually getting stronger, though. So the drug is, it's become more readily available, but it's actually getting more potent. And I think if we're making it in communities as well, then we need to be concerned about what is actually going into it to create this product, you know, and what that actually does on an individual's anatomy, you know, specifically their brain, obviously, but their, you know, their heart and, things like that.
If I can just add in there, like, the whole issue with ice is, you know, it keeps them awake for, could keep them awake for up to 3 days. So, you know, where Sandy's talking about the anatomy, that's what's happening, the effects on the anatomy, that lack of sleep, so the organs are working, you know, much more to support the body.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's having an effect on the brain and where the mental health stuff comes in,
and yeah. I think that's right. That's the other thing is, you know, the onset of things like psychosis and mental, you know, mental illness, but the violence that goes with it, you know, and really what Quake and Kuznick are trying to do is, you know, we've developed an options paper, we've also developed an investment strategy that we've actually given to government. In Queensland Health, to actually look at things like how we might actually raise awareness of community about this drug, but also provide some skills to community members to deal with this. This is not like someone's on the, you know, been drinking and becomes violent and you go in and you try to stop it. You can't do that with this drug. You will, it will cause more grief. They're superhuman. They're powerful. And this is why we're seeing things like increase of violence, and even, you know, places like and Arnie and Elsa might be able to talk about it. But equipping the professional staff even how to deal with this when it comes to their front door is not the way you would traditionally deal with somebody, say, with alcohol or other drugs. Yeah.
Is there enough support services like rehabs? I mean, it's encouraging to hear about. Gindarja being around for near 40 years and based in the community. Do we have enough facilities to cater to the needs?
Well, I'd have to say we don't.
Yeah.
Indigenous facilities, over the last 3 years, there's been close to 10 Indigenous residential rehabilitation centres closed down in Queensland.
Oh, God, that's criminal.
So we have five now, and as Aunt just mentioned, you know, they get referrals from interstate. I mean, 21 beds.
Really? It's nothing.
For the actual need, it doesn't represent it. So yes, we need more residential rehab services, but we also need places where people can detox.
That's the important thing.
you know, I haven't been in Queensland Health for a while, but, you know, at one stage I think we had six detoxification beds. I don't know if that's increased. And they're based here in Brisbane.
I'm not sure
of those figures, but yeah. I mean, at one stage, there was only very minimal detoxification beds, because to get into residential rehab, they need to go through a form of detoxification. Is that
correct? That's correct.
Yes.
Yep.
So you need to have the detoxification in order to be able to access a residential rehab service. Otherwise, we've just got this constant state of crisis.
You start to realise just how urgent it really is when you consider just all the problems that our communities are already dealing with in relation to alcohol, for example. Also, you were talking about the fact that the AMPs, the AMPs are always sort of promoted by government as reducing alcohol-fueled violence, but do you think there's been more of a focus on alcohol in that we're on the back foot when we're dealing with ICE, which is potentially even more dangerous?
Yeah, both marijuana and ICE. Like, the AMP has been around for 10 years and a study's just come out, and in Yarrabah itself it showed that there's been no change really since the AMP come in terms of the statistics they look at, like school attendance and hospitalisation due to alcohol-related violence and that kind of stuff. It's been pretty much the same. But the mental health issues over that time with the use of other drugs has been on the increase. Like in Yarrabah, marijuana has become a normalised drug. Mm. You know, like everyone knows about it, everyone knows who does it and that kind of stuff, and we can't have that happening with ICE.
No.
Are you worried, Sandra? I mean, when we talk about solutions, potentially, considering we have such a problem with incarceration and the fact, particularly up in, you know, Cairns and North Queensland, Aboriginal people are just a lot more visible, that if you look at potentially sort of criminalising this sort of drug use, that we're going to have a lot more of our young people going to jail. I think it's already happening in the NT, where a lot of juvenile offenders, I think 90% of them have reported ICE-related, that they'd taken ICE or had symptoms showing that they took ICE. I mean, what sort of effect is this going to have on our jailing rates?
Look, it's already there, and we've already got over-representation of both men and women within the criminal justice system. Women's incarceration rates are going through the roof, and if we look at trajectories, is going to be, unseen anywhere in the world, I think, in relation to it. But the Drug Use Monitoring in Australia group, they did a survey of adult detainees, and 37% of those adult detainees tested positive to amphetamine. That's a 13% increase since 2011-12.
Jeez.
It's the highest recorded rate of amphetamine use in JUMA, which is the Drug Use Monitoring in Australia's history. It's those statistics alone are saying we need to have a response, but a response that's not just a justice response, not just a hospital response. We need to include our non-government organisations, our Aboriginal medical services, our resi rehabs, but more importantly, our community in dealing with this. You know, community are vital to addressing this, and providing people with a place to actually, you know, and I don't like the whole thing, dobbing a dealer, but you know what I mean? Like, in the sense that if it is happening in community, then we need to actually tell people it's happening, because there's going to be a child that's going to, you know, there is children being affected by this, and they're our future. And, you know, in the great words of my mentor, Professor Grayson Smallwood, prohibition's never worked anywhere in the world.
Mm.
You know, if you prohibit the use of something, someone will find something else to replace it, and it's often more dangerous.
I think that, we see that with potential. Elsa, do you think ICE is replacing alcohol in Yarrabah, or is that too sort of simplistic to say?
Yeah, it's probably too simplistic, but the fact is the crew that are starting to use it they are using less of alcohol.
Yeah.
So they use this other drug, and then they're not drinking as much or that kind of stuff, but it's the psychosis stuff that comes with it, especially when they've got no more and they're coming down.
Yeah.
That's the danger zone there. It's when they're coming down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when, you know, they can become very violent. But the other issue we're seeing too is that they're also smoking marijuana when they're on ice. So those two drugs have an opposite effect. Marijuana is a depressant, whereas the ice, it gives you a false sense of happiness.
It's an upper, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. When they're smoking it together, they can actually go into overdose because the mind doesn't know what it wants to do. It doesn't want to be happy, doesn't want to be sad.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where the problems are creeping in, and then that's when the mental health issues are even getting worse. And they are, in Yarrabah itself, there has been reports that some of the people selling marijuana actually are lacing it with ice. Mm. So then this becomes...
So people are getting hooked on ice.
A step-up drug.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
What's required? What's different in the way that you treat the issue of ice as opposed to any other drug or alcohol? I mean, what do the people, the addicts or the people that are hooked on this stuff, what do they require that is different to what Gundarja might have already offered? Is there some changes required? Do you need to offer something different?
Well, they are, you know, they do require a lot more assistance. You know, some of them may not be able to participate in our programs. So we're actually looking at our programs now, you know, do we have to start having different sets of programs for, you know, the people that have come in with the ice issues, and especially if they already have mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's over the last 2 years, it's been a learning curve for myself and my staff as well. You know, I get my staff into whatever training we have, whatever Queensland Health can provide about ice, so we're becoming aware. You know, we do a lot of reading, so we're aware of what's going on, you know, with ice and that kind of stuff. But
the people
right now,
it.
It's hard for us. Like, they do come in.
Mm.
A lot of them know that, you know, detox, and if they haven't had the mental health issues, the main issues for them is depression because the ice has...
The effects
have used all the endorphins up. Mm. These are the things that make us happy.
Mm.
It could take up to 12 months for those to be replaced in the brain. So they're in a sense of depression all the time. They're not happy. So we got to look at other things to stimulate them, you know, extra sporting activities or that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The people that are using ice, are you finding in Yarrabah that they're prepared to talk, or people are looking for support, for assistance, just for someone to talk to?
There are a couple, you know, and they're my own family members. You know, they ring when they're in need. They want to come into rehab, but, you know, it's like any drug. It's like alcohol as well. When a user's in crisis, they will look for help. But the crisis usually is because they haven't got any more of the drug, so everything is bad on that day.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as they get another hit, you know, they're back into the same old thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's the other thing is we had, like, the mental health, we've touched on it, but also, you know, obviously we're talking about support for, you know, alcohol and drug treatment services, but, you know, the mental health and... support, more support services around mental health, social, emotional well-being. And you know, we haven't talked about things like suicide. I mean, communities, and when you're in distress, and often, you know, when you need help, it's not between 9 and 5. It might be for some, but, you know, it's usually at night time. And so if you can't access the service because its doors are shut, then it's the community or the family that are actually having to respond here. And that's what we're trying to do is, if we can equip our community and our family members with some skills and some training to actually deal with this, or, you know, as a sort of first response, then until somebody can, we can get help or a person can get help, then, you know, we're only going to build some resilience within community and literacy around this stuff.
Sandra, do you think, looking at it, we've focused a lot on Yarrabah, looking at urban and regional areas as well, I mean, a lot of the media coverage looking at ICE is obviously focused on, you know, just the whole of the community, Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal. What are we seeing in particularly region and urban settings within our own communities?
Look, we sort of pulled some statistics the other day in relation to this for our up-and-coming roundtable and our alcohol and other drug conference that starts on Wednesday. And, you know, people are being screened in our Aboriginal Medical Service, and they're the only sort of statistics we can get. But, you know, 78% of people who access services, and there was only 13 services that we'd actually got the statistics for, but had been screened for alcohol, you know, related issues. And the other thing is obviously our systems don't allow us to drill down to when you put in drugs, whether it's ICE or whether it's heroin or whatever, and we're looking at trying to enhance that a little bit so we can actually stop talking anecdotally and start talking about evidence. But, yeah, look, the issues in the urban areas, obviously access is relatively easier, as mentioned before. And as Aunt said, you know, people are leaving community like Yarrabah and go down to Cairns. You can get it. It's also a social drug in urban areas. So it's, you know, you can go to the nightclub and, yep, it's, but we can't really tell you what the utilisation rate is because we don't have the data. We from a community control perspective, we don't have the data to say, look, it's more prevalent in rural remote than it is in urban. But just given the way that the constructs of those communities and those differences, you would actually probably assume, which shouldn't, but that you know, it is as bad in urban areas as it is in remote. It's more visible in remote or rural communities because they're small. You can see it. But in urban areas, you know, you can actually be a little bit invisible.
I was thinking the challenges in urban and regional areas where there might not be the geographical sense of community as much. I was wondering whether that would prove to be a barrier. Obviously, remote communities have their own sets of challenges, but just because you can have a community in Brisbane that's quite spread out, a Blackfellow community, for example, I mean, how do we even come to grips with that?
Look, I think we have the natural, we draw naturally to our communities within our communities. You know, like if you're on South Side, you sort of, you know, you line up with your South Side mob or North Side, you know, and I think that's just how naturally Murrays just sort of tend to go. That's why I actually do think that we can actually do some really good work in the smaller communities because they're a closer community, and it's in their, you know, they're there. You can come in and work with the community and build capacity. I believe that the smaller communities can actually show us how we can do it better in the bigger, you know, geographical dispersed areas.
Well, it seems to be that
approach will be different. Yep.
Oh, sorry, I was just going to use the example of Yarrabah. It seems like that rehabilitation services being sort of used as a template or something if you've got interstate visitors coming. So I can see how remote communities in Aboriginal-controlled health services could potentially lead the way for the rest of the country.
Yeah. And look, and I think, you know, I think the Deadly Choices model that the Urban Institute have used shows that you can do really positive population health approaches when you create a sense of, you know, identity and you link it to health. Mm. You know, everyone wears a Deadly Choices jersey. Now, that's not just so much about, but you know that when they've got that jersey on, they've had a health check, whether it's been an adult health check or a child health check. And I think that's it, we need to actually use those population health approaches that Deadly Choices have provided a blueprint for. And we need to use that for not just chronic disease, but for other issues that are affecting our communities.
Ladies, I want to take a break for a song, but before I do, when I come back, I wanted to pick up the issue of dealing with the actual impact and effects on the ground as they're happening now. But we need to nip this in the bud. We need to try and put strategies in place where we're curtailing the number or reducing the number, having an impact on the number of people that are choosing to turn on. Now, we know that that substance abuse is, I think it's well documented, is a result of colonisation. It's one of those things, those negative impacts of colonisation. So I suppose when we come back after the song, I'd like to hear what your thoughts are in how can we try and nip this in the bud? What needs to be put in place? One, we're dealing with the wide use of it and the damage it's doing. But two, we need to try and have people stop and think about it and look at what they're going to do next. Are they going to go on with this business? What do we need to put in place? Is it, you know, there's all sorts of support required. So there's a couple of issues there. If you don't mind, we'll pick up on that when we come back. Our guests, myself and my co-host Amy McQuire, our guests are Ailsa Lively, who is the CEO of the Yarrabah Gindaja Residential Rehabilitation Service at Yarrabah, and Sandy Gillies, the General Manager of Policy and Innovation and Service Development at QAKE, Queensland Aboriginal and Islander Health Council. Stay with us. You were saying it looks like it's really sad when you think, well, maybe alcohol's better. The filthy, rotten alcohol may be better than ice and what have you.
Well, I was just saying, because of just all the trauma that is in Aboriginal communities, it's sad that governments haven't come up with first being able to understand and articulate the reality of the trauma, then see how it feeds into these sort of addictions. And it seems to be one after the other, doesn't it, Tiger?
It certainly does. Ladies, Ailsa and Sandy, many years ago, a lot of our mob out in communities, out on country, dealt with petrol sniffing by particularly rounding up the young boys and taking them off to culture camp and things and sorting things out that way. Do you think there's a possibility that something like that may work with ICE too?
So, yeah, there's a possibility. We run a small program in Yarrabah. We call it the Warrior Program. And it's for men that are affected by alcohol and are perpetrators of domestic violence. So it's not the residential clients that do it. It's just men from the community. And, like, we do give them information on alcohol abuse, domestic violence, but we get them back one day a week out on country, whether it's just going fishing, having a yarn as a group of men, you know, getting elders to talk to them. So we've been running this now for about 6 to 7 months. And
it's working all right?
Yeah, we've had a huge response to it. We've got young men and older men on the program. So this is after a year, we'll evaluate to see how it goes. And then, but I think it's important, you know, our mob just get too mixed up with their addiction issues, and it affects the family, and they forget about their traditional lives, where, you know, the men support the family, and, you know, they're the providers. So this program we do is, you know, when they do go out hunting and that kind of stuff, whatever they get, they go back to the family with it. So it's giving them that sense that they're the provider again.
Yeah.
Because one of the older guys that we had on it, like, he's, you know, been in a circle of violence and alcohol for many years. And he said, I haven't been fishing for 20 years. You know, in Yarrabah, it's just hop, step and jump to the beach, you know.
So you think then things like men's groups and things like this, these sorts of gatherings,
we do that, but the local AMS, they have a men's group as well, and they meet weekly, and they have a lot of members that attend that group as well. So it sometimes feels that the men are left out in the community. Like, you know, we do have a women's shelter here for the women, but, you know, where do the men go?
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to, you know, look at that to support the men as well.
What do you think could be put in place then to try and alleviate the growing numbers of people so that this doesn't become an epidemic?
Well, you know, we don't have any of the answers yet because you know, it's a new thing. But we are, as Gundaja, we're taking a step and we're calling all other organisations in the community together to talk about it. You know, we want to have, we're calling it an ICE rally. So at the end of the month, we're actually going to have a big day in the community where, you know, we march the streets about ICE, saying no to ICE, and then we'll head down to the park and, you know, we'll have messages throughout the day about ICE and PowerPoints and people talking about it. So community aware where they can come, what they need to look out, you know, for if their family is, you know, acting strangely and that kind of stuff. So we're doing this with no support from government or anyone else.
Yeah, right.
And
the ICE Roundtable, that's coming up in a couple of days, the ICE Roundtable.
Yep. That's all.
Tell us about that. What's going to take place?
Maybe, Sandy, you want to talk on that?
Yeah. Look, hey, look, the ICE Roundtable came as a result, obviously, of what we were hearing from community. And we said, look, we need to get everybody together, government, non-government, community, you know, Indigenous mayors, to come together to have a talk about what is actually out there and some solutions to how we might address this. And the National ICE Task Force, they actually did some consultations around the country. And as a result of doing consultation in the country, different communities were doing different things, you know, like as I was just saying, doing this with no resources, they're doing it within the resources they have. We said, well, we need to come together and actually work on this together as government and non-government to be able to respond to this, because we know that this stuff doesn't discriminate. It can happen to anybody. But, you know, and so that's what we're actually trying to do with the roundtable. Now, we've got some... So Cameron Dick, the Minister for Health and Ambulance Services, he'll be presenting on the day. Billy Gordon, independent member for Cook. Billy's been a great leader and advocate for this stuff and, you know, this portfolio. Because, as you said, it's affected him personally as well, and it's affecting his communities. Senator Jackie Lambie, Senator for Tasmania, she's actually coming up for the day. And she'll participate in the roundtable with our service providers. And Mrs. Tanya Smith, the Shadow Minister for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Multicultural Affairs, will also be there. So we're going to have the opportunity to have some direct dialogue with government, both state and federal, and around this issue. And they can hear from community service and service providers about what we need to do to address this. And what we do get out of the day, we'll put into, like, final recommendations, and then we will submit that again to state and federal government.
You've mentioned a couple of times that, particularly in the Yarrabah context, you've just started doing things without waiting for government. Do you think government, both federal and state, are aware of this problem, or they're showing enough sort of haste in dealing with it, considering it's so urgent?
I think they're fully aware, and they've got... You know, they've started the ad campaigns and that kind of stuff. But I think they're taking a more legal approach to it.
Mm.
So that's the only issue I have.
Yeah, and I think we've seen that in the state Queensland state budget. You know, there was $22 million allocated to Queensland Police over 4 years under a NOIS label.
Well, that could be used for detox facilities.
Yeah. It's law and order sort of stuff rather than looking at rehabilitation.
And as Aunt has mentioned, you know, we need to go to the root cause of this stuff. And I mean, Tiger, you know, there's enough evidence. The Trauma Centre in United States of America, they've said that, you know, people who have had complex trauma histories are more vulnerable to developing dependencies on methamphetamines due to the neuropsychological effects of the drug. They make people feel strong and powerful as opposed to powerlessness and vulnerability. We need to get to the root of it, and that's not going to be a justice response. You know, we need to make sure alcohol and other drug services are trauma-informed.
Yeah.
So they're dealing with not just the physical, chemical, what is in front of them, they're actually dealing with the underlying stuff, the trauma, and working on that as well, so that these people don't go back through the cycle.
And it feels like we're constantly saying that with absolutely every problem in Aboriginal affairs today. Yes. It's the underlying trauma. I just don't understand how governments can't understand the true meaning of trauma as it relates to our communities and just how it has fed into every single problem.
In a couple of weeks, there's a gentleman called Professor Michael Chandler coming over from Canada, and I've seen him present before, and he's actually presented some concepts around eliminating suicide in communities, and he's worked off cultural determinants. Now, there's the evidence. If we can actually work on the cultural stuff, which is what Annie Else is talking about, and we can actually help people or connect people back to things like feeling belonging, identity, dealing with their trauma, if communities can reduce suicide to nil based off these elements, then we can deal with all these social issues that we are having if we go back to the cultural roots.
And it's such an urgent problem, because when you're talking about ICE, Elsa, what you were saying about, you know, the violence when they're coming down, I mean, that will just perpetrate more trauma on not only younger generation, but, you know, our most vulnerable women and the elderly. I mean, that just perpetuates that cycle. It almost seems that, I mean, you have to have hope that healing is going to take place, but when you consider just how big the problem is and how entrenched that trauma is, it almost seems hopeless or helpless.
You know, that's correct. And, you know, I totally agree. It's the trauma that we need to deal with to assist our mob. You know, some people have lived with generational hurt. They don't let go of, you know, colonisation and, you know, in our programs, we talk a lot about that stuff to assist our clients, you know, to become stronger around those issues. So ensuring that, you know, they're talking about this stuff and getting it out, you know, that is very important.
And I think, Amy, the issue is, you know, we see national data. So this is not stuff that we make up. This stuff is actually printed. Australian Institute of Health and Welfare reported, you know, psychological distress in communities has never been higher.
Wow.
Now, why? You know, we've had all this, not all this money. I mean, we've had a lot of money to close the gap, and we need more. And we're doing some good stuff there. You know, we are starting to make some grounds, but we've had very minimal investment in alcohol and other drugs and mental health, suicide. When we've got a generation of kids, you know, 15, 24, whose suicide rates are seven times higher than that of their non-Indigenous colleagues, we have got a problem. And we need government to listen to us, because we've got the solutions. They just need to listen to us and trust us, and give the responsibility back to communities to become empowered, to give that sense of power back to individuals and families and communities.
What's the comparison of use of ICE with First Nations mob and mainstream mob?
Once again, Uncle, we haven't got the data. Yeah, we just don't have the figures because we're not measuring it as a drug per se. But you know, if we talk about cardiovascular disease or we talk about asthma, look, if we're three or four or five times the rate of non-Indigenous people, I uninformed would work in the field for, you know, 25 years. So I would have to say that we'd have the same statistics.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really horrendous problem, and I was reading in The Australian actually had a story on specifically looking at Yarrabah, but quoted Dr. Mark Wenatong talking about this window and that we only had about 4 years to start making inroads into it before it becomes an epidemic, it becomes even worse. I mean, is that right? Is there a window of opportunity that we really have to seize before it becomes an epidemic?
There is, and that was the so what Dr. Mark Wenatong's talking, well, maybe he's referring to, is that they actually did a study into the AMPs and alcohol management plants, and they actually were saying that it takes about 4 years for a drug to become a social norm, and that's what Aunt was talking about before. Marijuana, 4 years before it became a socially accepted drug. So, you know, once upon a time, and I'm not young, not old enough, but Uncle Togger might know. But, you know, Yandi, oh, no, no, no. But now yes. Yandi is nothing. Like, no, people go, oh, you know, they're around the corner, they're smoking Yandi. Now, old people in the old days, you know, that would have been just, you would never have done that. That was just disrespectful to do that in a house or in anyone's yard. Now, yeah. It's like lighting up a cigarette.
Yeah, well, I've seen old people down in Redfern. Well, I suppose I spent some 20, almost 20 years in Sydney in Redfern, and I saw some of the old people that were homeless, like long grass people, but they were homeless. Yeah. They were living in empties. No, they were living in empties. And some of these old people were starting to turn on to ganja and then on to heroin as well, you know. Yeah. And normally all they did up until that point was goonie. Was grog, you know.
Yep.
And here they are, 50, 60-year-old, and they're trying out the other stuff as well. Yep. You know? And that sort of blew me away. This is 30 years ago I'm talking about.
That's right.
It just blew me away.
And the old people, you know, like, I mean, I'm, you know, I'm only young, but I like to think I'm young. But, you know, 30 years ago, the old people drank down the, if they were drinking, they used to drink down the back of the house.
That's right.
They didn't drink in the house.
That's right.
And the kids knew, you know, not to go down there. Now, 30 years, and then all of a sudden, you know, Yandi, now ice, well, now drugs, you know, drugs. And, you know, we have got, I think we do have a small window of opportunity here to actually turn this around.
Well, I was just going to say, Sandy, like when you look at the 4 years, and I'm guessing it's just sort of like give or take a couple of years, I don't know, but where are we now? I mean, that's really freaky to me because it's not a very long time to sort of start stamping it out. And we're already we've been talking about it for like 2 or 3 years now. I mean, have we missed it in a sense? Potentially.
Look, I don't think we have. I don't think we have missed it. I think that we will have to work on this and make sure that alcohol and drugs don't get lost in the whole agenda because they are still prevalent and alcohol is still our main issue.
There's still a crutch that is required by too many of our mob, aren't they? There's still a crutch.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that, yes, we just need to probably get some really, really dedicated, focused attention and some strategies that we can actually support communities in actually doing. Because it's got to be a local decision, a local response. It can't be something that's driven out of Brisbane for Yarrabah. As Arnie just mentioned, you know, Yarrie's going to do an ice rally. I think that's brilliant. Great, because it is community's got to stand up and say, no, we're not going to accept this anymore. And if we know, if we find out you're dealing or we find out you're cooking, we're actually going to tell somebody. And people take a sense of social responsibility for this.
Yeah, that's what's required, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
In relation to Yarrabah, Elsa, how much awareness is there actually at the moment that you see in your community? You mentioned you're doing the ice rally at the end of the month.
Yep.
I mean, are people talking about it? Do people know what it is?
There's a lot of talk about ice in the community. And the funny thing is, like, the long-term marijuana smokers, they talk about it a lot. And if they're aware that anyone's using it, you know, they're talking to them about, it seems funny, but yeah, they're talking to them about ice, that, you know, we don't want it here, and they won't allow anyone that smokes ice to be in their group while they're smoking Yandi. So it's funny, like, that's happening in the community.
Already.
A lot of talk about it, like, we put stuff on our Facebook page and on the Yarrabah Notice Book Facebook page about stuff. So we're getting information out like that. And we're just developing our own posters here at Gindarja to start putting out on the out around in the community. But the funny thing is, this morning I dropped my son off to school and I come out to work, and I noticed something on every stop sign in Yarrabah this morning. Down the bottom, it someone spray painted ice.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And this has happened over the weekend. So someone's out there also thinking, well, what can I do about it? Mm. So, you know, they've gone out and, yes, vandalised stuff, but they're getting a message.
They're getting a message, yeah.
It's an all right form of vandalism, I think.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what comes out of Mount Isa today. I see that all the chiefs from all the departments are going to Mount Isa. Obviously, you know, we're all aware of what's going on in Mount Isa. And I think Mona Aboriginal Corporation came out in the paper and have talked about ice and other drugs, obviously, but with the youth. So it is actually... It's starting to take hold, I think, in some communities. So the roundtable and the conference, I think, are going to be really... It's good timing, and I'm hoping we'll get a lot out of it. And I think, Tiger, you guys are going to be there on Friday.
We will be there. Yes, we will be there. It's time for us to wind up. It's almost news time. We appreciate both of you ladies giving us your time, and we will see you at the roundtable.
Okay, see you Friday.
Brilliant. Thank you.
See you then.
Yes. Thanks very much,
ladies. Thank you very much. Bye.
Have a good day. Bye. Bye now. All right, Amy, we're doing an OB from the conference, the ICE.
Yeah, on Friday morning. So we'll be talking to a few people there. So it'll be good. Definitely tune in for that.
All right. Tune in tomorrow for your local Let's Talk.